go on by herself.
Log Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
That was created by Rachel and Michael of Trinity House Entertainment, Don Inc. And yeah, we are so live on the air. And the good part is the sun is shining. It stopped raining. So this is fantastic, and for those of you that like to go to places that are dangerous places, we're going to spotlight Susan Hunter, the author of the Leah Nash Mysteries, and this really is good. It'll get you going, and then you'll want to read the whole series like I'm doing. A person can just vanish, but maybe they can. Journalist Leah Nash investigates the decades-old disappearance of a teenage girl, and the author here is live, and she's going to tell us all about it. Good morning. How are you? And I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, Fran. I'm very happy to be here. I'm doing fine, and it is sunny here, too. So it's a good day
well,
for both of us.
That's true. We had thunderstorms yesterday. Did not appreciate them. So
yeah. Tell
us about Leah Nash and how she came to be, you know, this famous sleuth that everybody wants her to solve the murders, even though some of them don't want her to.
That is true. Well, Leah is a reporter, and she has been away from her hometown in Himmel, Wisconsin for about 10 years. She's been working at progressively bigger newspapers, and things are looking pretty good. And then because Leah doesn't always know when to keep her mouth shut, she gets herself into a situation where she says she quit. Her boss says she was fired. But the upshot of it is she's out of a job, and she takes what she thinks will be a temporary job back in her hometown, only it turns out to be a lot more than that, and she winds up staying there and solving several crimes in her little town. She's kind of a character, I think, that readers tell me that they either love her or they can't stand her. And, of course, if they can't stand her, well, then they don't move on into the books at all. But she's smart, she's funny, but she's stubborn, and she's quick with her tongue and doesn't always think about what she's going to say, and that gets her into some dangerous places sometimes.
Yes, that's very true. And a lot, some parts of her remind her of me because I ask questions and I don't stop until I find the answer. So I sort of identified with her, which made it even better. Okay.
Yeah.
The character that I wasn't thrilled about, and for those of you that want to read the next one, Dangerous Secrets, oh, my God, that's all I'm going to say about that, is Nick. Why in heaven blazes did she decide to go back to her ex-husband? You just don't do that.
Well, you know, you sound sort of like her mother. That is what her mother doesn't understand. and as so often happens, her mother is right. Leah doesn't like to give up on anything. If she's following up on a story, she's got to get the answers. If she's trying to solve a problem, she's got to figure it out. And for her, Nick is sort of the biggest problem and maybe the biggest failure in her life. She feels she fell in love with Nick. She was fairly young. He was good looking. He was smart. He was funny. And she really had not had a really great, she had a lot of losses in her life. And when she met Nick and he seemed to be just every girl's dream, she sort of changed herself or tried to, you know, she tried to please him and be the kind of person that he wanted. And it seemed to work. They got married. But Leah, after a while, I mean, you can only fake it for so long. It's not that she was really faking it, but she held herself back a little bit. And when she started reasserting herself, Nick was not that happy with it. He needed somebody who could tend to his needs more. But Leah commits. She's all in. So she was determined this is going to work until she found out that he had an affair and that just about destroyed her, because she had let her guard down enough to let him in, and then he betrayed her. And she felt hurt, angry, embarrassed, vulnerable, and she decided she was never going to do that again. But when he came back, it was almost a challenge to her. He said he had changed. He really valued the things that she had to offer. He made a terrible mistake. And she was a little cautious at first, but he does have a certain charm. And for her, it was the lure of trying to prove that she wasn't wrong in the first place, that she wasn't crazy for choosing him, that there really was what she wanted him to have, that he really had those qualities that she had sort of projected onto him, and that her mother wasn't right. But ultimately, she begins to see in dangerous places that there are some parts of Nick that he's a little possessive, maybe. He's a little there more than she wants. She needs her space. And eventually, she does figure things out. But yeah, it was not her wisest decision. And perhaps that comes from my own. Leah is not me, but she has made some mistakes that I have made. And perhaps that's a little bit of one that I made many, many years ago.
I think everybody does. But she sort of wanted to reinvent herself for him. And his possessiveness got on my nerves. I wanted to smack him in the head. And then if she went with her friends, he didn't like girls' night out. And then, of course, when you read Dangerous Secrets, you'll understand why I said that. And I'm not going to tell you more because you got to read it. So she has a book signing, and we meet Samantha. And that was really like, whoa. And then Meg Scott comes. And that was, I've had book signings, but that was really outrageous. How did you create that? And tell us why Samantha was there. And why this Meg got so upset that she was screaming at Samantha.
Well, Samantha is Leah's childhood friend. They were like best friends the way elementary school girls are. And then when they were about in the fifth grade, something bad happened to both of them. Sammy's older brother, Eric, was in a relationship with Heather, a very pretty, very popular teenager, cheerleader. And Heather disappeared one night. She'd gone out with Eric, and she never came home. Now, Eric's story is that he and she got into a fight. She got so angry that she wanted out of the car, out on a country road. And he was so mad, he let her go. And then he went home and didn't think any more about it until Heather didn't return home. Her parents freaked out. Big search started. Everything. At first, people were, oh, how sad, terrible about Heather. And then when they didn't find her, then everyone began to think that maybe it was Eric. And Eric did have he was known for having a temper. He's a nice kid, but he was a big, strong kid, and he and Heather had a lot of drama in their relationship. You know, they're together, they break up, they're together again. So people began to say that Eric was responsible, that he had killed her, and her body was never found. The police were never able to really, I mean, without a body, it's hard to prove somebody's dead. And so they weren't able to charge him, but his family was ostracized. His little sister was taunted and teased at school. Their house was vandalized. His father and mother finally decided to move away because it was just too hard to live in this small community. Small towns can be really nice, friendly places, but if they turn on you, it can be very, very cold places. So they left, but that didn't solve the problem because the family dynamic was torn apart, really. Eric's mom always stood up for him, but Eric's dad, he had a lot of issues. He and Eric didn't get along. It was just a tough situation. And as Eric got older, he tried to go to college. He just couldn't. He was drinking. He did drugs. He straightened himself out. He'd get a job. And then somebody would find out that, oh, I saw online that, aren't you the Eric that, you know, lived in that town and killed your girlfriend or whatever? So he had his own internal guilt and fears and worries. And he had external things, and he wasn't a very strong guy. And Sammy, his little sister, had idolized him, and she sort of assumed the role of, way too young, of the person that held the family together. Her mom and dad split up. Her mom was very emotionally needy. And so Sammy just tried to keep it all together, keep Eric out of trouble, and then finally, just before she decides to contact Leah, Eric attempts suicide. And she's so frightened that he might succeed that she decides she's got to find out. She doesn't believe that he killed Heather. She doesn't know who did. But she's read Leah's first book, in which Leah solved the mystery of her own sister's death. And she thinks Leah can help her. So in the meantime, while her family's having all these problems, the Scott family, Heather's mom and dad, and her little sister are going through their own kind of hell. I mean, they've lost their child, and they believe that the boy that did it got away with it. And Meg Scott is a very strong woman, and she is determined that Eric will someday pay for his crime. And to ensure that it's never forgotten, every year she takes a large ad out in the newspaper that basically says, my child is dead, Eric is free. What this needs to end. So she is unaware that Sammy's coming back to town, and Leah is unaware, and Leah's just happily signing books at her first hometown celebrity celebration, a little fundraiser at the library, when Sammy approaches her and begins to ask her if she could help. Meg Scott recognizes Sammy from across the room, and she just loses it. She takes out all that fury and anger and worry and desperation, all the grief that she still has for her daughter's death, and she unleashes it on Sammy. There's a big blowout there, and Sammy gets sort of hustled away, and Meg is calmed down, and Leah feels really bad. She wants to talk to Sammy, but when she goes out to find her, she's already left. And that's sort of the start of Leah getting her toe in the water here on this particular mystery.
I know. And then something happens to Sammy, and I was like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides to begin to investigate. And then Sammy hesitated. She didn't even want to help her. And
right.
Then she starts to feel guilty afterwards.
She does wind up talking to Sammy, and Sammy explains, you know, all the things that has happened with Eric, and that she wants Leah to do for Eric what she did for her own sister, and sort of rehabilitate his memory, and find out who really killed Heather. But she doesn't, when Leah questions her, she doesn't seem to have much, and she admits that Eric doesn't even really want it done, and Leah feels sort of awkward, like she doesn't want to say, Sammy, I think your brother probably did it, but she doesn't want to give her false hope either, so she winds up just kind of mushing around and saying, well, you know, things don't always come out the way, and then Sammy just says, okay, fine, I thought you'd help me, but you won't, I get it, you think Eric did it, everybody did, but I'm going to find this out, you know. He needs my help, and if you won't give it, I guess that's the way it is. But she's very upset, and she's crying, and she leaves. They've met in a little coffee shop later that night. And when she leaves, Leah really feels bad because, you know, did she do the right thing? She's She is really impulsive, and that's gotten her into trouble a few times. And she actually is trying to be a little more measured in her thinking and realize she can't solve everything or save everybody. But unfortunately, she decides to put that into practice at the moment, maybe when she shouldn't. So, yeah. And then afterwards, the next day, when she discovers that Sammy has been in a car accident and has died, she really feels terrible. And that leads her to change her mind about investigating what happened.
And that made me upset, too, because I like Sammy. She's got some head spunk, too. But it made it more credible when, and I said, okay, what happened to Sammy? Is this really an accident in my brain? So, two characters, one that I absolutely adore, one that I like, and one that I couldn't stand. And then you could almost figure out who that is. So Leah used to, she worked for Rebecca, who I can't stand. She's horrible. And because she's friends with Coop, who's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite character is Miguel. I love this guy. So
yeah.
she needs Coop as a police person. She needs Miguel as a reporter, and he's a riot. But why does Rebecca hate her? And they have so many confrontations.
Rebecca and Leah have not clicked from the get-go. And sometimes in life we meet people that we just don't like. And there isn't really a real reason. We just feel in our guts, this is not a person that I want to be around. And that's how Leah feels about Rebecca. And apparently that's how Rebecca felt about her. Rebecca and Leah are really different. Rebecca is quite sophisticated and quite ambitious and quite ruthless, really. Leah is not very sophisticated, and she's definitely not ruthless, except perhaps in her pursuit of the story. But Rebecca's unkind, and Leah, for all her quick temper and her quick judgments and things that she says she shouldn't say, she's a hard, kind person, and she doesn't like Rebecca. And Rebecca, though, we don't know very much about her background at this point, but she has had a difficult life herself, and she has not had the advantage of a mom like Leah has. And she has learned that she has to do things herself, and she's also learned that nobody hands you anything and you need to grab it and don't worry about other people. And she doesn't like Leah because Leah has things she doesn't have. You know, she has a mom that she loves, who loves her. She has friends who are close. And she has the friendship of Coop. Now, Leah and Coop aren't romantically together, but Rebecca doesn't even like, she wants Coop. And she wants Coop for herself. And she wants Leah out of the picture. And that drives a lot of what she does, just spitefulness. And I'm sad to say there are people like Rebecca in real life.
Now, I know there are a lot of people like Rebecca in real life, and we all meet them, don't we? After a while. So tell us, it's on my other page, about Charlie Ross, the police officer, the cop, who changes his attitude in the next book, but not in this one. Why does he want Leah to stay out of his investigations? He's like, you know, stay out of it. It's not your job, and you're going to be sorry. He doesn't wander around.
Well, no, he doesn't. Charlie's the old school. You know, he's like, he doesn't like the press. He doesn't like people. He doesn't especially like a young woman messing around in his business. He's one of those guys that's really gruff and set in their ways and just doesn't like anything to change. And he doesn't like that there's this woman reporter who actually bested him on an earlier story and saw things he didn't see. And he really just kind of wants her to go away. Okay. You helped a little bit on the last time round, but just stay out of this. Okay. I got this. And he and Leah didn't like him at all at first either. He was too gruff, and she thought he was kind of stupid and slow, and it was only after she worked with him a little bit that she saw he was more than he appeared. And I think it's interesting. I'm not sure if Charlie changed or if maybe we didn't see. We see everything through Leah's eyes in this book because it's a first-person narrative in all the books. And so sometimes you have to wonder if Leah's perceptions are exactly right. And maybe Charlie wasn't quite as much of a Neanderthal as she makes him out to be. But at any rate, he's a guy that likes to do the job. He likes to take care of things himself. And he doesn't want Leah getting involved in once he thinks he's got an active case on his hands again. I mean, he was fine with her helping look into the Heather story because he had worked on it when he was a young cop, and his mentor, Manly Bowden, was the sheriff at the time, and the two of them never gave up on the case but could never solve it. And for Manly, who is now very ill, that's one thing that's been on his mind, that he never was able to prove that Eric did it because he firmly believed he did. And in fact, Charlie asks Leah at one point when he realizes she's connected with Sammy and she's interested in this case, that maybe she'd like to look into it, see something maybe he didn't see. But once the case moves over into an active investigation, then he really wants her out of the way. And, of course, it's way too late for Leah to step aside then. There's no way she's going to give up.
That is very true. And wait till they find out who did it. No, I'm not going to tell them. They're going to be kind of surprised there.
I hope they're surprised.
Mm-hmm. It was. The ending was a surprise, but I felt bad for Manly because he actually wanted to see it through. So I said, oh, well, I'm sure, and whoever he is, he'll see it. And maybe Leah is impulsive. She overreacts, and she pushes people away. I think that's sort of like a defense, like a wall, so that she doesn't get hurt. So what is her relationship with her mother? It's one way in this book, and in the next book, you're going to see something different. So how come she and her mother are not exactly best buds?
Well, she and her mom are alike in some ways. They're both very strong women, and they both think that they've got the perfect answer for everybody else's problems. You know, if the world would just listen to them, it would be run much smoother. But that means that the two of them are often at odds. And Leah loves her mom, and she is the one constant in her life. She's had, her younger sister died in a fire when they were kids, and her dad walked out on the family. And then years later, her little youngest sister also died. So it's just Leah and her mom. They rely on each other a lot, but they sometimes get on each other's nerves too. But Leah admires her mom. She in some ways would like to be more like her mom, maybe. But she also feels she has to fight against her mom's tendency to try to run her life, you know, to protect her and take care of her when Leah feels like she's perfectly capable of doing that herself. So they, in this particular book, they're having some struggles in their relationship because Leah is aware that her mom is who she's always believed and counted on, because she's holding something back. She's not telling the truth about something. And when Leah finds out what it is, it's devastating to her. And it takes her quite a while to come back around to realizing that her mom is a person just like her. And she makes mistakes and she makes decisions that maybe aren't the best, but they're always for the best reasons. And it's a time when Leah has to grow up a little bit.
Well, I know, because she reminds me of my mother, who controlled everything and decided it had to be her way. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I started to speak up much later. And she would just say, if you have a problem, you have a problem with school, which I didn't because I was an A student and perfect, just tell me and I'll take care of it. And I'll say to her, but I can speak up for myself. No, it's okay, I'll take care of it. And after a while, you know, you begin to go, do I, can I speak? Can I say anything? And yeah.
Yeah.
She was tough, but that's okay because it's because of her I read all those books every month because she forced me to read 10 books a week and take notes and remember them. So it's stuck with me. So we meet Eric and his mother, and she questions him about the fight that he had with Heather, and they come up with a story. And what do they have to say? That they're trying to convince her that he was home talking to his mother and that he had a fight with Heather. And it seems kind of callous that to leave somebody out in the dark. It didn't even seem to bother him. So why doesn't anybody believe him? And does Leah believe him? I think what he did was wrong.
Well, I think that Eric's story is pretty... It seems pretty weak, you know, like, I just let her out of the home. But ironically, part of his story that's maybe the least believable is the part that's true, really. Leaving someone in the dark is kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
But if you live in a small area and you're very familiar with it and it's a bright night, it's a bright moonlit night, and nothing ever happens, right? You live in a place where nothing bad ever happens. You just don't think about it. And you're mad, too. And see, that Eric has a terrible temper, which is why people, even though he's a kid, they've seen him lose his temper. And they think, well, maybe, you know, maybe he did. And his mom, Leah she's not thinking this is like a very strong story. She wants to give him the benefit of the doubt because she'd like it to come out that Sammy was right, but she realizes it might not. Eric might have done it. But when they tell their story, it's pretty simple. He got home, they talked for a while, and he went to bed. Mom had a sleeping pill so she didn't wake up. And then Eric didn't realize anything was wrong when Heather's parents were calling because they turned their phone off at night. Because this is back in the day of, you know, landlines and answer machines. And his dad's a judge, and they sometimes get nasty calls from people who don't like the way things go in court. So they have a habit of turning the phone off. So it's plausible. But the problem is, when Leah first starts out, there doesn't seem to be anybody else who could have wanted to kill Heather. You know, she was the perfect girl. She was Meg's perfect daughter, and all her teachers said they loved her and all her friends. And so the story that Eric tells doesn't hold up very well against the perceived personality of Heather. I mean, who would want to kill this nice, beautiful girl except her mean-tempered boyfriend? So Leah is reluctant to dismiss the mom's and Eric's story because that's all they got, but she has to dig deeper to see what was really going on because there's something funny about Eric's mom, and she realizes that more when she goes to Sammy's funeral and sees the mom in action.
Well, that's true, and you know, not everything is what you think, and sometimes if you dig deeper into Heather, oh well, yeah. There are lots of opinions. So another character that I was interested in is Tina. What was her relationship with Eric and with Heather? And why did she put herself in the position to be used by both of them? I wanted to say to her, Tina, wake up. You don't do what you did with Eric. And I was like, that was pretty clever, by the way. So I could see where she would hate her also. Wouldn't like exactly like Heather.
Yeah. Yeah, Tina was a girl who wanted to be like Heather. You know, Tina was a attractive girl, but Heather was a beautiful girl. And Tina was thrilled, really, when Heather befriended her. And because Heather had that sort of charisma, I guess. You know, people, whether she was nice or not, people were drawn to her. And Heather sort of had a little small circle of girls that the other kids sort of mocked them and called them the Heathers, you know, because they all wore their hair like Heather and talked like Heather and tried to dress like Heather, but there was only one Heather. And Tina was really happy that Heather chose her for her special friend and confidant. And she gave Heather whatever she wanted. You know, if Heather couldn't get her homework done, Tina would give her homework that, of course, she had done.
Mm.
And if Heather wanted to lie to her mom and tell her that she was at Tina's house when she was really out with someone her mother wouldn't approve of, then Tina would lie to Heather's mom. And so when Heather said that she was done with Eric for a while and gave Tina more or less permission because she knew that Tina liked Eric, Tina was like, oh, okay. And she may have harbored some hopes that Eric would fall in love with her, but he liked her. She was fun. She was nice, but he was infatuated with Heather. And so she knew when Heather wanted him back, he'd go. And she just didn't have enough self-esteem to say, I don't want to play this game. And it wasn't until she was much older that she realized what had happened and how she had behaved and why she had done that. And that's when she began to reevaluate really what Heather was like. And so she was her very best friend, her idol maybe in high school. And as an adult, she was someone that she saw as really bad for her and not a good person to try to emulate. And that in fact, Tina on her own was way better than Tina with Heather.
You know, there are a lot of teenage girls, even younger ones, that do that. And they want to aspire to somebody else. And they don't realize that who they are is just fine. And that issue was definitely brought out in this book. So I'm saying, you know, there are people, even older people, if you look at, you know, the Academy Awards or you look at other shows like that, award programs, and young girls, everybody wants to be like, you know, Britney Spears or Madonna was whatever, or whoever's Ariana Grande or whatever, and they don't want to be themselves. They want to be who the other person is, and then you lose yourself sometimes. So that
right.
That almost happened to Tina. So tell us about Tom Nash, Leah's father. He's an interesting character.
Tommy Nash is the kind of guy everybody likes. He's friendly, he's funny, he's fun. And when things are going good, then Tommy's good. But when things are going bad, Tommy doesn't do well. He's not a pure person. He got along in life pretty much by being a good-looking, fun, friendly guy. And not too much was expected of him. And when he hit a patch in his life where things weren't going very well and he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do and he had to grow up a little bit, he got frustrated and he looked for ways to make himself feel better, feel good, feel happy. And he got himself into some big trouble. And Leah's mom, being the strong woman that she is, she tried to hold things together. She did, but she needed a grown-up partner, and what she really had was sort of like another kid, and that was tough, but she spent a lot of time trying to keep her kids from seeing that about their dad. She didn't want them to think badly of him, and he loved his kids. I mean, it wasn't that he wasn't a nice guy. He just wasn't someone you could count on in the crunch. And
I
he got himself
into gambling. So why did he leave a note that said, that he left her mother? Why did he just leave a note like that and just disappear? That must have crushed Leah too. Not so much her mother, but her.
Yeah, it really crushed Leah. Because, I mean, she didn't know anything bad about her dad, you know. And she loved him, and he was, she thought, somebody she could count on. And when he left, she had no idea why. Her mom just told her that he left after there was a fire at their house, and her youngest sister, 2 years younger, died in the fire. They had all, the mom, her mom, Leah, her younger sister Annie, and the baby Lacey were home. They were supposed to be away. They'd gone away to visit a friend of Carol's, but Lacey, the baby, had gotten sick. She had a fever, and Carol decided to go home. Tommy was away for the weekend, and so he wasn't even there. And a fire started. Mom got the kids out. They ran over to a neighbor's. Mom went inside to take care of the baby. Lacey and Leah were out on the lawn. And then Leah started talking, kind of showing off a little bit, you know, to one of her friends. And then when she looked around, Lacey was gone. And Lacey had run back to the house because her cat was still there. She was afraid. And she got back into the house, and she died there. And when that happened and Tommy got home and his house was destroyed and his daughter was dead, and he couldn't deal with it. And so he left. And he left a note because that was easier. And Tommy, as Leah's mom told her later, Tommy liked to take the easy way out. And so he just left a note and said he loved them, and the best part of him was still with them, with all of them, with her and with the girls, Lacey and Annie and Leah. But he had to go. And that was the end. That was the last time that Leah saw him, even though she was only like 10 when this happened. And her dad had told her once 13 was the... That was when it all happened. That's when you hit the double number, you know, you hit the teenage numbers, and they were going to have the biggest party ever when Leah turned 13. And so she never really believed that he wouldn't come back. And she couldn't let it go, and her mom couldn't stand seeing that. And that led to a real bad decision on her mom's part. And ultimately, we discover that maybe Tommy was trying to do the best he could with the resources that he had. And in the end, he did make a sacrifice for his family. But, yeah, he was an odd man.
It's too bad, but I agree with what you did. So, two people have found, and Leah decides to get more into the case because two bodies are found. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Rush wanted to take her head off, and said, "Would you do me a favor and let the police investigate on their own?" And actually, she's not going to let them do that. What makes her continue, even though he said, you know, like, you got to stay out of this. It's a police investigation. You're going to get hurt. She doesn't even look at the bad side that something could happen to her. So why does she keep going? Because this is just Leah. I'm telling you, she's really impulsive, but you have to like her.
Yeah, she cannot do it because it's become personal for her. She has to find the answers, not just for Sammy, but for herself. And there's no way that Leah knows that she's not always right, although she finds it hard to admit, and she knows she makes mistakes, but she just can't stop herself from moving ahead. She doesn't ever trust that anyone else is going to be able to do it right. She may not do it right herself, but at least she'll be the one making the mistakes. She's got to do it because she doesn't really, at heart, trust anybody else to do it. And that really stems from her, well, from those early years, you know, she found she couldn't trust her dad, and she couldn't maybe even trust fate or God or whatever, because she lost her sister at such a young age. So she comes to think that the only person she can count on is herself, and that's kind of a lonely place to be, but it's what drives her forward. And it's what drives her friends crazy sometimes.
I hate to tell you, I'm the same way. I learned a long time ago that the only person that you could depend on is yourself, because you usually get it right. And I said that to someone a long time ago that said, you know, the people that work for me, I said, I told you a long time ago, if you want something to get done and you're worried that it's not going to get done in time, just do it. But before I forget, tomorrow, New York Times author Philip Donnelly will be here with Speed the Dawn. On the 13th, the former head of the CDC, Michael Shushko, Evil Wins, and we're going to talk about Darfur and the refugees. On the 21st, one of the best books that Alan Jacobson has ever written, A Karen Veil, The Dark Side of the Moon. And for those of you that want to become astronauts, this book will teach you everything that you need to know, and you'll decide. It's really interesting. On the 27th, I have an exclusive one-on-one interview with none other than Tess Gerrinson, and we're going to talk about, not a book, her movie Island Zero, which is scary, and it's out in theaters in Maine, and she wants to chat about the movie, and I am so honored that she picked me to do it. And then I am taking off the month of July, people, and we will start with Jenny Morton Potts, Hiding on August 1st, and let's not forget that Susan Hunter will be back August 22nd with Dangerous Secrets, and Stephen Manchester on the 20th with the three shoe boxes. If you haven't read it, get a box of two shoes out. And that's just some of August. So sometimes she pushes Nick away, and to tell you the truth, I was hoping she would push him off, you know, somewhere like where he can't get back up and, you know, just stay. And yet he seems to want to help her. So what does she keep, you know, like a yo-yo back and forth? Why he keeps pushing away, he keeps coming back. It's almost as if she's a possession and he feels he owns her, and, you know, that's just the way it is. So she's very difficult at times. So how come she keeps pushing him away, and why does she take him back? I wouldn't. Seriously.
Well, Rita doesn't have your life experience for you. She's still got to learn some things. It's because she doesn't like to quit things, and she thinks maybe she and Nick, you know, maybe they could make it. But Nick is, Leah doesn't see it yet, but he's pretty manipulative, and he's a psychologist. He knows people, and he doesn't. I mean, it's not that he doesn't care about Leah. I mean, he does. That's why part of why he wants her back, but. So he's got some insights into her, and he does want her to slow down, think a little bit, consider her mother's feelings and what, you know, what boundaries are and where she maybe should stop. And that's the part she doesn't really like. She likes the part of him that's fun and smart. And that reminds her of a time when she was a bit younger, and they did have a lot of fun together, and maybe they could do it again. And she is, he's an attractive man, you know. We don't always choose based on what our intellect tells us. So Leah is, you know, susceptible to his charms, but underneath the surface, maybe below what she's even conscious of, she feels him trying to control her a bit, yeah. And that's when she pushes away from him. She wants someone in her life, but she doesn't want to be controlled. And if that's the price, then she's not going to be willing to pay it. Not again. So, yeah, their dynamic is interesting.
Well, now we're going to meet two other characters. She goes to meet Manly Bowden. I really like that
mm-hmm.
man. And then she goes to meet Paula. Tell us about those two. Tell us about Paula and Manly and why they even agreed to talk to her.
Well, Paula in Manly Bowden is the sheriff who initially investigated Heather's disappearance. He was a mentor to Charlie Ross. He believed from the start that Eric was the killer because he subscribes to the, you know, the most obvious solution is usually the correct one. So he worked hard. Eric didn't tell the truth all the time. And when they find something that was not true or where he was hiding things, that just hardened Manly's belief that Eric was the one that did it. But he could never prove it. And because he never really forgave himself for missing out on that particular case. And in fact, later he left work as a sheriff and went into private security. but he always stayed in touch with Ross and some of the guys from the old days. And Paula, his wife, they were an odd match. Manley was a, you know, blue-collar guy, hardworking sheriff. Paula was from a much wealthier family and had many more resources available to her. But Manley was proud, and he didn't want her to rely on her family wealth to help them out anytime, and so she didn't. But she did use it sometimes to help other people out. And she loved him, and she wanted to support him in whatever way she could. Then Paula has MS, and that was diagnosed a few years ago, not very long before Manley was diagnosed with cancer. And it's his lung cancer, he's terminal. And it's at that point that Ross has always stayed in touch with them, is, you know, talking to him, and he knows that Manley would like to wrap this case up. That would give him a lot of satisfaction. He tells Leah about it, and he tells Manley about Leah. And at first he seems receptive enough. He's certainly in no condition to go out investigating again. And as Charlie says, they followed every lead they could. Maybe some fresh eyes would help. So when Leah goes to see them, she's expecting that Manley will be pretty receptive. And Paula is very friendly and nice, pleasant. But when Manley comes into the room, it's clear from the get-go that he doesn't want to be there, he doesn't want Leah there, and he doesn't want to have anything to say. She tries to draw him out, but he's very hostile to her. And finally, he gets so angry that, you know, accuses her of trying to prove that they didn't do their jobs right, or, you know, to make the police look bad, and she just wants a story. That's how reporters are. And then he works himself up so much that he goes into a coughing frenzy, and then she figures, you know, I really better get out of here. And as she's leaving, Paula comes out and stops her and sort of, you know, apologizes and says that Manley's just, you know, he's just feels maybe embarrassed or ashamed that he didn't solve the problem, the murder. And she says, Lisa says, well, do you think, and that he's convinced still that Eric did it. And when he heard you saying, you know, maybe someone else, that set him off. And Leah asks her if she believes that Eric did. And she says, well, I believe in Manley, and that's what he believes. So Leah leaves thinking this was kind of like a bad lead that Charlie gave her. And Manley calls Charlie and sort of reads him out. And then Charlie is upset at Leah, wondering what the heck she did to get Manley so upset. She defends herself, and then they both kind of they both agree they have different perspectives on Manley and what sort of an investigator and what kind of person he really was. And it isn't until later in the book that Leah realizes who was really directing the situation between Manley, Paula, and Leah on that day.
Well, we can't tell them that. And they'll be very surprised. A whole bunch of surprises at the end. So when they finally realize what happened to Heather, how do they deal with that? And does anybody really care at that point?
You mean the community as a whole, or particularly like Manley and Paula?
The community as a whole, and the community as a whole, and even Eric. What would he say if, you know, knowing that what happened to Heather? Would he care? Or does he care?
By this time, Eric doesn't care about Heather in the way he did, of course, as her teenage boyfriend. And in fact, he would actually rather that the truth had never come out, that Heather's body had never been. And in fact, does his best to try to pretend it doesn't matter, and that it doesn't, that what Leah is discovering isn't really true. People in town, I think everyone is surprised because of the circumstances of Heather's death. And whether anyone changes their mind about her, I don't know. Her parents, of course, are glad. I mean, that this has put the end to, I mean, they will never not grieve their daughter, but at least they no longer have to feel that she just vanished. Now they know what happened, and that makes it easier for them. For Tina and her other friends, I think for everyone that knew her, it would bring some type of closure and maybe a little bit of regret at how quick they were to decide what had really happened to her, and that how we do not ever really know anybody, and in the way that maybe we do, you know, we know how much they choose to show themselves to us, maybe how much we intuit about them. Other people are always going to be a mystery to us, really. You only know as much as they want you to, and they have to realize they only knew a part of Heather. Part of what they knew was true. She was pretty. She was smart, maybe, to a degree. She was sweet when she wanted to be, but there was a lot of other parts of Heather that she chose not to share with everyone.
Well, that's the part that they have to figure out for themselves. So we have a few more minutes, and let's get back to the witch, Rebecca. I can't stand her. really, seriously, she's evil. So Rebecca decides, she goes on a quest to get rid of the sheriff, and she wants him to retire. Why? And what would happen if Coop actually opened up his eyes and realized what a horror she is? Which, you know, you'll find out eventually, but not yet. So why does she want the sheriff to retire? What does she have against him?
Well, she doesn't have anything particular against the sheriff. For Rebecca, it's just people that stand in her way need to be moved out of the way. And initially, she has big ambitions for Coop. She has plans for him. She thinks he's wasting his time as a lieutenant in the police department. He should at least try to move on up to the next level. And when she talks to him about it, he says he's not planning to. His boss is leaving, but he doesn't want to go up to a job where he'd be even farther away from actual police work, from investigating, from working with people. He doesn't see that, you know, setting schedules, writing reports, and going to meetings is really what he's very good at. So, but he's kind of worried when he tells her that, because he is infatuated with Rebecca, and he thinks maybe she won't want to stick around with a small town police lieutenant. I mean, she's got more on the ball than that. But at the same time, he's not ready to surrender himself just to please her. And Rebecca, to his delight, doesn't push. She says, "Oh, I understand. I can see you really do want hands-on, and you need to, you know, you need to do what you need to do." But, you know, for Rebecca, when one door closes, she just knocks a hole in the wall. She decides that Coop could still be part of an investigative team. In fact, it would be even more prestigious if he were the sheriff of the entire county. So the current sheriff is close to retirement age, but he's got a few more years. And when Rebecca comes across some information about him that is really more of a half-truth than a truth, she contacts him and suggests it might be a good idea for him to retire, because she has got a story ready to go about something that he probably wouldn't like to have made public. Now, if it were just him, he probably might write it out. But he's afraid that if he knows comes out, some other people are going to be hurt who don't deserve to be and who can't take it the way that he could. So he's only a couple years away from retirement anyway. He decides, all right, she's persuasive. He agrees to step down, and then she agrees to keep a lid on the story, thinking then that she will be able to secure the sheriff's position for Coop, because in Wisconsin, when a position like that is open, the governor's office is able to appoint someone to finish out the term. So Coop would be able to have 2 years without running for election, and then in the 2 years, who knows what else might happen and what other doors Rebecca might be able to open for him. So she does not tell him that, of course, but Leah gets wind of what really happened. But for once, she decides she's not going to open her mouth about it, because Rebecca has been very good at driving a wedge between Coop and Leah, mm-hmm. and she hates that, and she's determined not to fall into that again. And so she knows what Rebecca's doing, but she decides not to tell Coop. And it's hard, but eventually, because he's not stupid, he does figure it out, and then he makes his own decision about what to do. And so Rebecca
made a different one too.
Well, because Rebecca's very resilient. You might think at first that takes care of her, but she's got other cards up her sleeve, as they say. And the two people I get the most feedback on really are Miguel and Rebecca, who are polar opposites.
My favorite
really.
Character. I love Miguel.
Yeah.
And he gets more of a part in the next book. And he's really, he's amazing. And I love his little chica. And he's so loyal to Leah. And then she tries to drive a wedge between Coop and her. And that really gets out in the next one. So we have one more character in this book. We have about 3 minutes, but that's okay, because I always put it in for more. Blaine Traeger, what was his relationship with Heather? And when he's confronted, what happens with that? And when we find out a little about Heather's relationships, oh boy.
Yeah. Well, Blaine is a high school teacher, was a high school teacher when Heather was in school. And he was that cool teacher that all the girls like. You know, he's not that much older, mm-hmm. maybe 10 years older. He's good looking. He's smart. He's way more worldly than the high school boys, you know. And he seems to really... He really is passionate about his subject. He's an English lit teacher. He does care about that. And he loves to read poetry in class, and the girls love to hear it. And Heather is very taken with him. And she babysits for his family. He is married and has a young child, a baby. And so Heather and Blaine begin to see each other as more than teacher and student. And they have a relationship. And when when Leah begins to suspect that, Blaine does what he always does. He lies and he bluffs. And by now, he is superintendent of the school system, and he's got a lot more to lose, even than when he was a mm-hmm. teacher. So he feels no hesitation, blatantly denying it, and also sort of threatening Leah in a way, not a physical way, but you know, he's not going to take it lying down until he realizes that Leah isn't someone you can say no to, and eventually she's got something over on him that makes him admit to her, but only to her, what really happened, what his real relationship with Heather was. And he's just kind of a nasty guy. You know, he has a nice wife and a nice daughter, and he doesn't care, you know. And there's some teachers like that, and some people like that all walks of life.
Everywhere. I know. I taught for 36 years in a public school in the Bronx, and I met quite a few. Not me, but I must have done something right, because my students are on Facebook, and I was honored about 3 weeks ago when several of my students from my very second class found me to tell me that I made an impression on their life. Yeah, my foot doctor is my student too. Paul loves me. So all I have to do is say, Paul, I'm coming, and I don't have to wait for an appointment. But, and my reading students, I'm a reading specialist. Yeah, so I feel kind of happy that they still love me and that they think I'm, you know, one girl, I said happy birthday, and she said that means more to me than all my friends. So I felt good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is next? You don't get, go ahead. What
no, I was just
Leah?
Lucky. Tell us about Dangerous Secrets, and I'm not going to ask the question about Nick, because they'll find out for themselves. So what's, t- tell us more about Dangerous Secrets, what's next. And I was surprised by several things that happened in the book. And I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to go hooray or, oh. And I said, oh, goody. And where can we learn more about you? Well, tell us about Dangerous Secrets.
Well, in Dangerous Secrets, Leah is back trying to focus on her job as a true crime writer, not as a detective. And she gets pulled into a mystery because of her friendship with Miguel. Miguel's uncle is accused of murdering a woman who runs an online dating site. And it turns out that more than one person in town is connected with this online dating site. And Miguel and Leah have to put together a really complicated story that pulls two different threads together. And I think that Leah makes some really big decisions. She lets her life take a new direction in this book. And it's something that's going to play out in future books in the series. So for the people that love Miguel, he's a big part of this book. And I think you'll get enough Miguel. And the people that don't like Rebecca, I think she'll get her comeuppance in this book. So that's as much as I want to say about it without giving too many secrets of the Dangerous Secrets away.
Well, I think what's going to happen is also that you're going to have to come up with another villain to go against Leah. And would you ever pair her up with Dave, with Coop? Would she ever wind up with him?
You know, I don't know. That wasn't my intent when I started writing, but sometimes the action goes places I don't expect it to. So I don't know. It's a little bit, you know, that movie long time ago, When Harry Met Sally, and the question, can a man and woman just be friends, you know, or is there always some romantic tension there? It's a little bit like that with Coop and Leah, but they have so much shared history. I don't know if that would ever work as a romance, if they'll be better off as friends. But she does have
We won't tell who you bring in. Yeah, she has a nice one in the next one. I like him.
Yeah.
So we'll find out what happens. Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's really
cool.
So where can we find out more about you and your work? And this Dangerous Secrets is coming out in August, and everybody be here on August 22nd when we talk about it. I have it in my schedule. It's already there. And I'm sure there's going to be more after that, and I'm sure you've written more. But where can everybody learn about the first one, the second one, and this third one that's coming out? This one was good. The third one, really, I love it. I love Dangerous Secrets. That was like, my kind of book.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. You can find me on the web at leahnashmysteries.com. All my books are there, and links to them, and a blog, and some other little background stuff about Leah and her town, and I hope people will come and visit.
Well, they will by the time I post your review with 27 stars after this interview. you could read Leah's the review about Leah Nash on Just Reviews. I'm going to post it. It's going to be on Facebook, LinkedIn, and a whole bunch of other places. And what I've been noticing, and it's really weird, is that the minute I post something, about 10 people read it. I don't know why. Yeah, they read my Just Review site, and they read my interviews and stuff. And it's really great that people listen before they come on the show to know that it's fun to do these interviews, and I really love doing them. And I just do it because I want to and because everybody keeps me so busy.
Well, I thank you very much, Fran. This was very fun, and you asked me questions I hadn't thought of before.
I'm sorry. that's because of my reading masters and the fact that the professor I had made me look past what's on the page. So I learned to look deeper than what's on the top of the page. So I tried. So everyone, it's beautiful here. It's beautiful where Susan is. I hope it's beautiful where Cheryl is. And everybody have a nice day, and bye.
Bye-bye.